You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on WJFF.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
The show is like mother, like son? Yes.
That's right, with
really?
A question mark.
With a question mark.
Right. You know, it's a mother-son thing.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on Radio JFF. This is my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
We're in the studio with our producer, Mark Sutton.
All right, our guest today is Victor Varnado. He's been in major feature films with Eddie Murphy, among other stars. He's also a stand-up comedian. He's a writer, and he's a director. He does a lot of things. We're really excited to have him. Please welcome to Like Mother, Like Son, Victor Varnado. Welcome, Victor.
Thank you.
Victor, thanks for coming out and joining us in the studio today. So stand-up's really in the news right about now, and you have gotten yourself into the stand-up. That's how you made your name, doing stand-up, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Actually, I started acting first, and then I did more stand-up, like, recently. I've been a little bit popular now, and I'm trying to do more of it.
You know, stand-up is something people actually have nightmares about, that they have to stand up and make people laugh. How did you first get up on the stage to make somebody laugh?
Believe it or not, it was a dare from my English teacher, because I used to joke around in class so much that he was just like, if you want an A, why don't you try that on stage? If you go on stage and do it instead of joking around in class, I'll give you an A. And he did.
And you made your classmates laugh?
No, I actually did it in front of an audience at a nightclub.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Where was this?
This was in Minneapolis.
So you are a comedian. I mean, do you write your own jokes?
I do.
And how do you do that? What's the process for you to write a stand-up, a skit? You sit down and say, I'm going to do a skit. I know my audience. And,
first of all, stand-ups hate to call their jokes skits, by the way. So if you talk to any other stand-ups, never say that.
Okay, so what do we call it then?
Jokes, bits, are things.
A soliloquy.
Yes, a soliloquy. Yes, this is my personal soliloquy, my sonnet. When I think of a joke, it's always about trying to communicate whatever it is that I thought was funny at that moment to whomever, and how you write it is not important. It's just as long as people get that feeling, that feeling of laughter.
Do you have a sort of theme, like most of your jokes are about family relationships or romantic relationships, or does it change?
No, I don't have any sort of theme. I mean, there's one thing I talk about. People on the radio can't see that I am a black person with albinism, so I'm a black albino, and I usually say something about that in my act.
That'll give you a good start.
You know, leave it up to it would be like weighing 400 pounds and not saying a word about it on stage if I didn't say anything.
Well, back to your, you know, who you are and your biography. Your mother is Valerie Plame, right? And your father is Joe Wilson.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I thought your mother was in a top secret government.
My mother used to work for a top secret government project, but
so she's not Valerie Wilson then.
No, she's not. Her name is Mary.
Valerie Wilson.
She's very sweet.
Never mind.
That's okay. You have a specific audience who's going to laugh out loud at that.
Yeah, well.
They're just going to be like, whoa, Valerie. That's the stuff.
She's the outed CIA operative from Karl Rove,
if
you remember that whole shenanigans.
Yeah, I do. You know what? It's weird. I've been back and forth on the news lately because usually I keep abreast of the news because I write jokes about it. But then lately I haven't been doing anything because I've been preoccupied with some deals that have been going on. So
tell us a little about that. What are you up to next?
Well, right now I'm working on an internet pilot for HBO. It's a sketch show that I'm writing and producing and also directing some of the segments as well.
Now, I want to ask again about HBO doing internet. Is this something new that HBO is working on that you can...
Yeah, for HBO it is kind of new. The internet is a huge presence right now, and if you ever go on the internet, you look at YouTube, there's so much entertainment, and so all these networks started creating their own internet sites, like Comedy Central has Motherload, and I forget what the Sci-Fi Channel is called, but like every station has their own internet station as well, and now HBO is trying to develop their internet station.
So otherwise YouTube would take over. Essentially, or they already have in a way, so that the other station, the other networks are trying to get in on this.
Yeah. Well, one thing that the networks have that YouTube doesn't have is they have the ability to put a little money behind it so things can actually be produced and look really good, because on YouTube it's usually one specific thing.
And I don't think actually YouTube creates any content.
No, they don't create any content. Everybody uploads it.
So that's the real difference between HBO and YouTube.
Exactly.
Now, do they give you a theme? Again, I keep asking about themes, but for this pilot that you're working on,
they just wanted to be funny. That was pretty much the only mandate that they handed out. They were like, please be funny and don't be not funny.
Okay, sounds like a pretty serious charge, however.
The trick is to not be funny?
Yeah, the trick is to not be funny, exactly. Yeah. Double negatives are good in this case.
So, but you're also an actor. I mean, I'm curious, you've co-starred with the incredibly talented and quite politically astute Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, I have. The Governator.
The Governator. And Eddie Murphy, who, you know, he certainly has figured out how to keep his career in the stratosphere as a comedian. What's that like working with these guys?
Well, here's the thing. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a huge icon. He's huge. He's like a walking, talking American icon, like Mickey Mouse or McDonald's.
That's with an incredible Austrian accent.
Yes, with an incredible. But that's what he is. He's an icon. So it's very strange. It's hard to look at him and talk to him and deal with him realistically, because he looks and sounds like, you know, what you've seen over and over again in movies and what millions of people know. And so it's hard to separate him as a person, like, when you meet him. Because
probably for him, too, he probably can't separate.
Even if he's saying something completely, completely regular, like, can we have the air conditioner turned down just a little? And like that. he could be saying anything, and he's still the Terminator.
He still sounds like the Terminator.
Exactly.
Now, when you act in these movies, are you acting in a comedic role, or are you the villain, or the
I've been all over
throb?
The place, actually. I mean,
you're not typecast. I've never
been the heartthrob.
Well, that's next.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to write something for myself. I get to play the heartthrob. I'm going to be surrounded.
Well, Tom Cruise is over. You're next.
I want to ask then about the movie that is now in various film festivals, What We Did on Our Holidays.
Yes.
And in that, I understand you played Stutter Boy. Could you tell us a little bit about that role?
I work in a convenience store. I stutter, and there's a guy who's on holiday from England, and he's visiting Miami, Florida, and he befriends this guy who is working at the cash register, and that's me, and I stutter incredibly the entire time.
Is it supposed to be humorous? Is that the idea?
No, the stutter itself isn't supposed to be humorous. I'm also closeted gay in the movie, and not only do I have a problem saying that I'm a closeted gay, I also have a problem actually speaking the words that I'm a closeted gay. And so there's a little humor in how I reveal myself.
I guess you don't want to reveal yourself right now.
No, you have to go see it. David Carradine's in that movie?
Yeah, I was going to ask about David Carradine. He plays the old man, and of course I don't think of but then again, David Carradine's been around since the 60s, too. Mm-hmm. So, what was it like playing with David Carradine?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to shoot the same day as him. My days and his days were always, we didn't shoot. In fact, when I was leaving, he was just coming onto the set, which is too bad because I wanted to challenge him to a kung fu battle.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah. I mean, you want to, if the number one person you want to challenge to a kung fu battle is kung fu. Come on.
You are, all jokes aside, you actually are a black belt, correct?
I am a black belt.
And that's sort of, I've never sat in the same room with a black belt before. I'm sort of intimidated.
Only ask nice questions.
Right, yeah. So you know how to kill me if you wanted to, but you wouldn't because it's against the black belt ethic, right?
True. But it's also a misconception that only black belts know how to kill. Everybody knows how to kill.
But you know how to kill me with hockey socky stuff.
Yes, hockey socky.
Whooshes and
also another thing.
Yeah.
We put that in the same trunk as skits for comedian hockey socky.
I am in trouble. I gotta get a lot of hate mail. Don't tell them my email.
In the same trunk.
Yeah. Skits and hockey socky. Well, maybe there's a joke in this.
As well as calling a businesswoman a little lady. Yes, with all that.
Big wheels.
Don't want to hear about directing.
Directing is new for me. It's only the last couple of years where I've been doing a lot of directing. And I just finished my first feature with Warner Brothers. It's called Twisted Fortune. It stars Charlie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's brother, which was odd going in.
Who knew that he had a brother?
I don't know. He didn't know until recently when he was on the Chappelle show. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it stars Charlie Murphy and some people from Mad TV. Carol Alt is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's a fine little lady.
Yeah, she's beautiful. Her eyes are striking. Amazing. Her eyes are amazing. It comes out about the middle of next year. And, it was my directorial debut.
So when
you also co-wrote it, right?
I did.
And I understand you took a script that the first try at a script, and then you took it over and kind of gave it the finishing touches, or how did you co-write this one?
Right. Originally someone came up with an idea for the movie, and then he wrote a script. But when you do a rewrite of a script, if you do so much writing on it, then you kind of get promoted to being the co-writer of the movie. And so I had to change the movie to such a degree that I was the co-writer.
Okay. So you made a point of changing it just enough that you got the co-writer.
I just wanted it. Actually, before, when they were shopping around the script, the production company, they couldn't get it funded. And then after I rewrote it, it got funded immediately from Warner Brothers. So I think that deserves a co-writing credit.
Now, this is going to be, I assume, a pretty high-budget movie.
No. Not well,
even at Warner Brothers. I mean.
High budget for me, not for Warner Brothers.
Okay.
It's about $3 million.
Well, that's a lot more than the movie you made Beep for $30.
Exactly, yes. It's a huge difference.
Yes. Well, I would say you've come up a bit. But tell us about Beep real quick.
Beep was a short film that I shot years ago. I forgot what year it was. I think it might have been 2000. No, maybe even after that. I shot it in my apartment at the time with two of my friends. I just asked them to come over with a borrowed camera, like a Hi-8 video camera, and a microphone that I got from Radio Shack. And then I just wrote the script and shot it, and that was it.
And how did you sell it?
I sold it by first showing it in a film festival, and then after it was screened at a film festival and people liked it, then I showed it to Comedy Central when they were looking for films for their new short film program that they had at the time called, I think it was Jump Cuts. Exactly. So then they optioned it for an undisclosed amount of money, which was several times what it cost to make.
So you had a good profit margin on that one.
Exactly.
Okay.
So when you do your comic soliloquies, you start by telling or making some kind of reference or joke about being black albino, right? Is that the right? Am I back
usually.
In my trouble here again?
No, you're fine.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about growing up as a black albino and then turning that into a hugely successful career, not only, but...
Living in Alabama, no less.
I mean, it's just intriguing to me that you came out of that as a comedian and laughing your way through what must have been sometimes a little difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, a lot of comedy comes from pain, which is too bad. I wish comedy could just come from happiness. That would be nice. But I was teased. Just kids tease people that are different in any way. I think the only benefit of my growing up was the kids had never met anybody like me, so they didn't know exactly how to tease me. But other than that, I definitely was teased, but that directly turns into my stand up nowadays,
mm-hmm.
which is great, I guess.
So you started down South Alabama as a kid, and then moved to Minneapolis.
Yeah, my parents were separated, my father moved to Minneapolis, and I moved up with my father. And went to school there where I studied the arts and sciences. I was a huge computer programmer buff for a while.
And did you get into, did you go to college?
I did. I went to college at the University of Minnesota and the College of St. Thomas. I went to both schools a little bit. I never finished, though, because I took a computer programming job.
Did you study film there, or is it mostly computer
I did some film studies. I had a specific major called Media for Children, in which case I studied some film and some writing were part of it. My scholarship originally was based on playwriting. I got a scholarship.
Okay, so you've been doing that for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But now you're in New York City, right?
Ah, here I am.
And not L.A. Is that a decision that you made, that you make every year, that you like New York more than L.A., being that you're now a Hollywood commodity?
I go back and forth a little bit, actually. For a while, I had an apartment in both places, but then that proved to be idiotic financially. So I eventually let go of my apartment in Los Angeles. But, yeah, I go back and forth here and there. In fact, I was just in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, so... And I anticipate in going back again.
Do you find you work better in New York, but you do deals better in L.A., or how does that play out?
I like the people better in New York in general, and I like, in L.A., I like the countryside a little bit more. But there's definitely more going on in Los Angeles. There's just tons of stuff going on. Like, it's completely saturated with the entertainment industry. In New York, there's not as much entertainment, but, I mean... But there is entertainment, but it's just different. I really like the community a lot more in New York, but LA has a beat in the amount of stuff going on, and I like to go to the beach.
Now, this might be so last week, but when you saw Michael Richards freak out on the stand-up stage,
yes.
What did you think? I mean, when I actually went and watched it on YouTube, I was just... I still don't know what to think about that. I always loved Kramer as a character on that Seinfeld show, and just to see him go on an absolute...
He responded to a heckler, right? I mean, that's what set him off. I'm not giving him an excuse, I just upset him.
When you see the footage, you realize he absolutely blew a gasket, and he... Well, but I'm curious what you think, having as a comedian, as an African-American comedian.
Well, first of all, as an African-American comedian, or just an African-American, I thought that it was senseless. It was so it's just stupid. He's an idiotic person. He went on television later and said that he wasn't a racist, but he did commit a racist act. That was a racist act, and that was unforgivable. And until he... I mean, you can't forgive him for something that... You can't forgive someone for something that he doesn't even understand...
That he did.
Yeah, he doesn't understand exactly what he did, and he doesn't, so, and therefore hasn't actually taken responsibility for it. And as a comedian, I watched him. I was like, that is a very bad comedian. He's horrible.
Nothing funny about that.
Heckling him because he wasn't funny in the first place, and then he goes off like that, which is even less funny, and then does the opposite and alienates the entire audience. So that is a horrible. Horrible comedian.
Have you seen this new movie? I may say, is it Borat? The English
Borat.
Borat.
Yes.
Now I hear that advertised as pushing humor absolutely to the limits, or the idea of funny absolutely to the limits. What did you think about that movie? I haven't seen it yet, but I'm curious.
I actually thought it was really funny. I was worried about it when I heard about it. I was worried because I thought he was just going to be making fun of people in a mean way.
Yeah, that's what I felt from reading about it.
But when I actually saw the movie, it wasn't the case at all. In fact, there was a sweet Jewish couple, and one of the jokes his character is that he is like from a foreign country, and he's Muslim, and he doesn't like Jews at all. And And there's a very sweet Jewish couple that he stays with at their house. And I was just like, oh, no, I don't want him to see him do something horrible to these people. But he did absolutely nothing to them or made them feel ill in any way. It was actually really smart how they handled it, yet it was still really funny.
But it was funny.
It was
okay.
Really funny what he did. I'm not going to spoil it either, but it was just hilarious.
In fact, he is Jewish, right? That's what I read somewhere. Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah, his name is Sasha Cohen. Yeah, I think he might be Jewish.
So for you in the stand-up, I mean, I'm like my mother, I think she's equally fascinated with the thought of getting up in front of a crowd and trying to make them laugh.
Terrified.
Even if you have a soliloquy. I'm not comfortable with that term now. I can't say skit.
You can say joke.
But it's more than one joke. That's why you get up there for 10 minutes.
Oh, well, you can say routine.
Routine. That's the word I'm looking
routine.
For. When you get up and you do a routine. What level are you most comfortable? I mean, are you comfortable with 3 people, or is it 500, or 1,000, or 25? I mean, you grew up in the comedy clubs, which is like 100 or less, right?
Yes, but I've also, I mean, when you do television, it's millions.
Millions.
So
when you know you're making jokes to millions, I guess that's equal pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if it's live.
It is a great amount of pressure. When it's live, it's even worse.
Do you, like drink a glass of water before you go on, and like, you know, I don't know what, you know, do you have a little routine that gets you set up for the...
I don't have a specific routine that I do physically, but mentally I have a routine. There's like certain things I remind myself of when I'm about to go on stage, and it's really important. Like, I remind myself to be energetic, and I remind myself, like, that although I've said some of this stuff a thousand times, the people out there are hearing it for the first time, and so remember to relate it in that way.
Let's listen right now. This is from Comedy Central's Premium Blend. Let's listen to a little bit of Victor Vernado on Premium Blend.
I'm a black albino. Anybody else? Come on, where are my black albinos at? Where are they at now? Where are they at? Where are they at? They're never here. See? They never show up. It's always just me. It's always just me. That's cool. You know, when I was growing up, my mother would be like, Victor, you're a black albino. You're God's little special project. You're special. You're special. But then later on, I met my dad. He went on to have 13 kids. I would run up to my dad and be like, Dad, I'm special. And he'd be like, I got 13 kids. You ain't special. I got one of everything. Look at your little brother. He's a Komodo dragon boy. Look at him. Look at him. He likes flies. He likes flies in the sun, boy. Give your sister a hug. She's made of glue. Hug her, boy. Hug her. She's a sticky girl. Aren't you a sticky girl? A sticky, sticky girl. That's what my dad would say all the time. I bet you guys are probably saying, Victor, you're a black albino. How come you don't eat babies? Now, you guys...
So you do use family situations.
I do. I do. I don't actually have a Komodo dragon brother, but...
Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, okay, I do.
I want to ask about that audience.
Yes.
I'm sure they're very primed to respond.
Yes.
But as you say, you're telling jokes to them, but you're also telling jokes to millions of others. But you must gauge, as they say, your timing off of your live audience. Or is that a recording out there?
No, it's a live audience. You definitely
That's
do
not
have
a
to
laugh
gauge.
Track.
You definitely have to gauge your timing off of them. That's exactly right, because it's really, 'cause you can get them on a roll, and if you get them on the roll, then you're set, and that's the key. Just get them on a roll.
But you paused in the beginning, which seemed brilliant. I mean, with your opening statement, let's get this thing going, and then a little dead spot.
Yeah, I always pause. In fact, it's really funny because when I did it on Conan O'Brien, I think people were freaking out because like I just paused, and I mean every minute is worth like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or actually, every second is worth $100,000 on a show like that, and so But it was really interesting. So when they aired it, they left all the pauses. They didn't edit it at all, which was amazing.
Right. Okay.
I watched Barbara Walters' recent, like, 30 years of mistakes or whatever it was, and she interviewed Richard Pryor a number of times, and I thought watching that interview was really interesting because he said, you know, I'm born with this natural gift and I blew it. You know, he's the funniest guy ever, but he killed himself over drugs and blew his face up, tried to commit suicide.
What, he said that?
Yeah. It was an amazing interview. I mean, the last interview. And the beginning was he was denying he was doing drugs at all.
Right.
And then he comes back on after he burned himself and was, you know, a year before he passed away. And he's like,
not to be too dramatic about that, but it's what Victor said earlier.
This is supposed to be a feel-good show. Come on,
right.
Guys.
No, but I'm getting at the question is...
I think it was a good thing you said that because I was going to do my first drug tonight.
You saved me. No, but this is a talent.
Randy was a peer counselor in high school.
Yeah, that's right. Comedy, especially at the level you're at, is a talent. I mean, I could go to, you know, clown school and maybe make a couple of kids laugh, but I am no comedian. I never will be. You're born with a talent. Obviously, you're taking advantage of it. But that's work, and that's back to the pressure. You know, how do you feel about having that talent? Do you feel an obligation to make comedy, to spread your skills and humor, or do you do it for money, or how does it work for you that you have this skill, this talent, and what's the motivation for you?
I really enjoy it, but I don't feel any sort of obligation. I don't feel any sort of obligation to try and be a comedian. I do feel the only obligation that I feel is to try to make the world in any way more positive with what I'm doing, and it doesn't have to be comedy. And so I just want to be a productive part of the world, if I can.
Victor Vernado, thank you. Your website?
Bestalbino.com or VictorVernado.com.
And how do you spell your last name?
VARNADO.
Victor Thanks. Vernado.
Thank you, Victor. It was fun to talk to you.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you very much.
And look for Victor on your Sprint telephone, Warner, HBO, CBS, ABC, NBC,
1, 2, 3.
YouTube. He's everywhere. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Victor.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I said that time may change me, but
I can't trace time. Visit us online at www.likemotherlikeson.org and let us know what you think of the show.
Good night.